Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour here. And thanks so much for joining us with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry, and we've got another Sunday morning. And wow, we actually had a week with some half decent weather and open windows. Hi, ladies.
Well, morning, hi, everybody.
Yeah, fresh air, sunshine, sun on your face. This exactly. is what it's like for people that live places other than the Northeast, you know, the smart people.
Yeah. No
but
way.
Then we get to celebrate it, right? Like, honestly, it's the little pleasures. We were just talking about that before we went live on air, like the little pleasures in life. And I guess it's that contrast, like John, like Abraham Hicks says all the time. It's that contrast that leads you to your desires and things you appreciate. And after this past winter, and particularly February, wow, to step outside and have 50 degrees and sunshine, it's like, yeah, it's awesome.
You know, I don't want to forget, like we're all, I feel like, in danger of forgetting what it feels like to enjoy everything. And I don't want everybody to forget that and forget how to appreciate. So I'm glad. And you know what I couldn't remember? Like, I don't know if I was having a moment. I should just look it up. I couldn't remember the stupid, simple phrase about March. Does it come in like a lion and out like a lamb, or in like a lamb and out like a lion?
It can be either way. Whichever one it comes in as, it goes out the other way. It can be either way.
Oh. All right. So I'm not all that crazy.
I think the one used the most is in like a lion.
And it sure came in like a lion. The wind on the first day of March was nutty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was insane. And I hadn't quite moved back into I'm calling it my new old house, because as you guys know, I've been on having this renovation the renovation started September 8th.
Yeah, you're six months.
I was six months, although I got to stay there for the first month. I didn't have to move out because they were really doing like stuff outside. So I've been out of the house. So it does feel like a new house, but it's still my old house. And it gets in my little section of the world, when it's windy where you are, it's like hurricane.
Well, because you're right on the water.
Right on the water. And that does something. And it howls, and it's, you know, it's fun and simultaneously scary. But I am officially back in, even though there's still a few things that need to be done, but it's not going to stop me from, you know, living in there, which is fantastic.
Awesome. Good for you.
Yes.
Now what are we going to talk about?
Yeah. I know, but
now, are you okay, Jonna, with being out of the pantry? Are you all right with that?
So I must say, now this is a little weird. The pantry was difficult to actually live in because it's small and it's a pantry. But while I was there, I got basically three meals a day. Well, two, because at lunch I'd be at the office. But and my dogs and I had never, we just enjoyed each other's company so much. And I had wine time every night with my mother. And then when my aunt, who is the reason why I moved into the pantry, when she arrived, we had wine time, you know, every evening. And then I was in bed by 7:30 every night. It was fantastic.
You're becoming your mother.
I know. So, you're going to have those things I miss.
Yeah, you're going to have some sort of version of like post-traumatic pantry syndrome. You know, you're gonna wish you were back there. What is that? What do they call that when you've been abducted and you end up identifying?
Stockholm.
Yeah, so that's it.
Stockholm syndrome.
Is any mom in there? Stockholm syndrome going on right now?
She's going to start sleepwalking and reaching for saran wrap and chickpeas. She's like, I know they're
and uncooked pasta. Yes.
It's a little bit crunch. Although I will say, so far the biggest benefit to moving back into my new old house is, so the new master bedroom is now built over the new two-car garage. Those are the things that didn't exist in the previous new old house. And this is crazy to me. So I guess you can't say master bedroom anymore, but old habits are hard. So the old primary bedroom was built on the east side of the house. And as you guys know, the house sits on the river. Well, that's a dumb place to put the bedroom because you don't get any of the beautiful view, which is out the west side of the house. So now the new primary bedroom,
master.
We'll just go with it. All right. Is on the west side of the house. So literally, you guys, when I wake up in the morning, and I've only been there for a few nights, but I wake up in the morning and I open my eyes, the first thing I see is the river. And I got to tell you, that's not a bad way to start any day at all. It's very, very zen, very peaceful. Now, we were talking about, were we talking about contrast? Maybe we were talking about contrast. No, on the air about contrast. So let's contrast that, shall we? With
okay, here we go.
Let's contrast that with I'm not gonna complain. As a whole, even though I'm not officially all set up yet, the renovation was a wonderful success. It is gorgeous. Everything I could imagine happened. Did it take longer than I wanted? Yes. Did it cost more than I expected? You betcha. But on the whole, I mean, I guess that's common for renovation.
Yeah,
everything just came out wonderful. With one teeny tiny complaint that I was not expecting. Why? Because again, they don't show this on HGTV. I did not realize that the entire house, in every cupboard, under every cabinet, in every drawer.
I know what you're gonna say.
Say it, Carol. Say it.
Sheetrock dust.
You are exactly right.
Yep.
I had no idea how insidious this stuff is.
Yep.
At all. And so in my excitement to move back in, I mean, I started moving back in and then I'm like, oh, here's a little sheetrock dust. And then every time I opened a drawer, like every single, because we didn't redo the kitchen really didn't get touched, except we ended up unexpectedly having to do the floors of the kitchen. That's a whole other story. Inside everything, inside every glass, every fork, everything. So meanwhile, so I'm not good at that. And I had some help with cleaning it. But
pause. Wait, Frankenberry. I'm not good at that. AKA cleaning. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I just said I am what I am. Well, maybe we can cancel Popeye soon too. Anyway, I just got a little zinger in there. So what I didn't realize, because I am not good at cleaning, especially sheetrock dust, is that if you don't clean the entire place all at once, and you only clean, like, say, one room at a time or one section at a time, by the time you're done cleaning that one room, the sheetrock dust has managed to migrate to the clean area. Like, you don't ever get rid of it until you get rid of all of it.
Okay, so here I have a question for you. What kind of heat do you have? Is it forced hot air?
Yes.
Okay, so 100% what you need to do is change your filters if you've not already done that. Or have Have someone change your filters.
Yeah, good point.
Thank you.
And team one has 1 point. And it's not the cheapest thing in the world to do, but your heat had been running during all of this sanding. But to have someone come clean your ducts might be a good idea.
Now, this is why, Curly, you are definitely going to be my right hand on my new HGTV show that I am going to pitch. And that show is going to be called, I can't call it what I really want to call it. Remember what
the Real Renovators of New Hamburg.
God, I love it. No, remember the character with the soup on Seinfeld? Well, I want to name my
show. Oh, the soup Nazi,
Yeah, but you're not allowed to say that word anymore because I really wanted to name my show Reno Nazi, but I think they'll put the kibosh on that. So then I was thinking we'll change it. Yeah, so we'll turn it into, how about like Reno Biatch, right?
Renozilla.
Renozilla, that's right. That's what we talked about way back in the beginning. And you're going to be my right hand on that. Because here's what the Renozilla show is going to be about, and I know that there's definitely a need for it now, having lived through this, is you need somebody who's on the job site every day making sure that people are on time and not causing you to spend money you don't need to spend and not breaking your stuff and not ruining your stuff. And because if you don't have somebody there doing that all the time,
this is true. Yeah. Then walls get put up where they're not supposed to, and fireplaces surrounds go on the wrong fireplaces and other
and
disasters.
Worse than that, that's right. Worse than that, I had some of my fine crystal stemware.
Oh,
broken.
No.
Broken from just vibration. So, you know, things like that. But you don't, you know, and I know that probably tradespeople are like, hey, it comes with the territory. But when you have a discontinued Waterford collection and they get broken, you're like, ooh, tell that to the judge, because I ain't buying that. It happened. But if you had a Renozilla, stuff like that wouldn't happen. And that's why you need me. But since I don't know construction and you do, that's why I need you.
Okay. You need me. I need you.
Yep.
We've said this before, Jonna. Me and you blended together, make the perfect person.
I know. I know. And we still do. You know, we were perfect before. We're even more perfect now. I don't know how that happened, but it did.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is so amazing. Now, let me tell you something else fun, since we're just on the house subject. Something I didn't know, and I don't know if I mentioned this last week. So you guys know, and I posted a video of my eagle when I moved back into my new old house, who was just majestically sitting on an iceberg in the Hudson, and I managed to catch him take flight. He was, you know, hungry and doing whatever eagles
so cool.
do. Very cool. Well, guess what? I have now. I have two eagles, but not two bald eagles. There's a type of eagle, I guess, called a golden eagle. Oh, and wow. the golden eagle and the bald eagle, I don't know if they're a couple. I don't know if they're an item.
Are they hooking up?
They might be hooking up because they spend an awful lot of time together. And so now I have that funness.
Frankenberry, of course her eagle's not just bald. It's gold.
That's right. Because Jonna just doesn't have some regular run-of-the-mill eagle. Uh-uh.
No. He's got a gold one. It is so cool. I'm going to capture the two of them. They're like, you know, they're friends. They're pals, which is so interesting to me. I just love eagles, especially the bald eagles. There's just nothing more fun. They, when you can kind of, they're not like ordinary birds. Like you can feel they have a different presence. Like when they are flying through the sky, it's just, I can't even describe it, but it's just wow.
Well, it's cool because they were almost extinct not that long ago in history. Oh. And I follow a couple of Facebook pages for Beacon, one for the Hudson Valley. And there's a lot of people capturing photographs of bald eagles, and I just think it's really cool that they're out and about there in our backyard.
I wonder if they were almost extinct because people were, I mean, were people killing them? Honestly?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't know what kind of predators they have, honestly, except man.
Right.
Hmm.
I don't know.
And then,
hey, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you know that it is illegal, apparently, in New York to keep an eagle feather?
Yes, we've discussed this.
Yes, we have discussed this.
Because you have never found one and picked it up.
Because I've never found one and picked it up and hid it away somewhere in the recesses of my new old house. I've never, ever, ever done that.
Never, ever.
I've never heard that knock on your door.
Did you have anybody feeding your raccoons while you were in the pantry?
All right. So listen, I did not. Occasionally I would go over there and I found a spot in the yard where I have this stuff called Critter Crumble, Critter Crunch. I have this special blend of food.
Moose Munch?
No, it's called Critter Crunch, I think.
Kidding. Moose Munch is a human snack.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. My critters would like that. So for a bit, I was going over there and in the yard and I was sprinkling that for them. But guys, everyone keeps telling me, they're like, don't do it. Don't attract those raccoons. When you attract the raccoons, you're going to attract the mice. When you attract the mice, you're going to have a mouse problem. Like I had more of a mouse problem than I even realized. Because when you start ripping your walls apart.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. So you might have to give that habit up.
Or I don't have to give it up totally. Like if I find a spot way in the yard, away from the house, I can still feed them and maybe see them. but not have them so close that the mice are like, partay.
I have a little a treat blaster gun for Ginger. It's like you load it with dry treats. It's got a trigger and it shoots them. So maybe we can get you one. You can stand on your deck and blow them 20 feet off the back deck or something.
That is too funny. Yeah, because I got to tell you, man, the mouse problem was a problem. Like they get everywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing the tiny spaces they can get themselves in. So I think we're going to not have ongoing raccoon stories with the new old house, huh?
We'll see. I don't know. I do kind of mean they were very entertaining to watch, but they're filthy, dirty creatures. I mean, they're filthy. But maybe I can because I'm getting some new cameras set up, maybe I can do like a yard cam, and then we would still have the best of both worlds. Still have some fun raccoon stories. They're just going to be far enough away where they're not on top of me.
Yeah, well, until you get comments on your Facebook post that said, hey, why is that one raccoon limping? And you have to reply with, well, I'm not good at the treat blaster just yet.
Be funny. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's the updated version of what's going on. And I can't wait for you guys to see it. And I can't wait to post some pictures. It's not quite picture ready yet because we're still full of sheetrock dust and got a few more things to do. But I'm acclimating well. In case you were concerned.
So my question is then, now that you're in there and all comfy and stuff, when is your first planned trip to the grocery store to stock up?
Frank and Barry.
Well, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. I will never step foot in a grocery store ever again. Like the one benefit of this pandemic has been the invention of Instacart. I love it. I never want it to go away. And that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I have not stepped foot inside a store, guys, in any store, not clothing, not furniture, not housewares, not food, nothing.
Wow.
And I don't ever intend to. Like my mother tried to drag me furniture shopping. You know, I needed a couple new pieces for the renovation. I was like, oh no. Wayfair.com got me all over it. That's what I did. I didn't need to sit on a couch. I'm superficial. I go for looks. I don't care what it feels like, you know, right?
Well, what if it's not comfortable? Doesn't matter. Look how pretty it is.
I can understand that, I guess. My futon's as hard as a rock, but I also never sit on it because my futon's as hard as a rock.
Yeah, well, this girl slept on a futon in a pantry for a month. I could do anything. You want me in your bunker. My couch could be made of sandpaper and bunker.
If for no other reason than to be able to use one of your high heels to fend off intruders.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Oh, man. Yeah. Now, is Mom and Aunt sad that you moved out?
I'm sure she is. But the good news is because my aunt, her sister, is there, there was a nice little transition. You know, she didn't have to miss me too much because she went from me to her sister. And they're like, you know, two peas in a pod.
Well, that's good.
So that worked out. Yeah, that worked out. So anyway, I was trying to think of a very good segu for our guest we have coming up while we were chatting, and I don't have one.
You know, you could Curly, just you? Introduce her.
No. Don't be crazy. That's crazy talk.
I know.
Right, that's really negative talk.
I could be sabotaging my reputation as a segue professional.
Oh, God.
I did just, it, didn't I?
You did. Just go.
All right. So on that note, we have joining us today, and I'm very excited about this because I think a lot of us suffer from this condition and don't even know it. We have joining us Dr. Candace. Now, I'm going to pronounce her name Satai, but we may have to change that when she actually joins us. She is the author of the Self-Sabotage Behavior Workbook, a step-by-step guide to conquer negative thoughts, boost confidence, and learn to believe in yourself. And I think, hey, who couldn't benefit from that? So we're going to talk all about how to get rid of those negative thoughts and stop self-sabotaging ourselves, which I know, guys, I know I do it. I think we all do it.
Oh, we all do. We're living in a tough enough environment around us. We might as well do what we can to create a better environment within, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's all between our ears. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Candace Sitai, whose name may be pronounced another way, but we'll find that out when we come back from the break.
All right, that sounds good. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And we have our guest on the way. And please stick with us.
You're listening to 92.9 WBPM. Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour here this morning on 92.9 WBPM. We've got Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now for segment number two, which means it's time to get to this morning's guest. And we are more than happy to welcome Dr. Candace Sitai.
Thank you so much.
Please disregard how I butchered Dr. Sitai's name before we went to commercial break. I just, for some reason, I had it rhyming with, you know, Jedi. I'm sorry. But let
that's,
me
that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, it sounds exotic. Yeah.
So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Candace Sitai before we launch into our fabulous discussion. Dr. Candace is a therapist, author, speaker, coach, and former yo-yo dieter. She's also the creator of www.meonlybetter.com and is committed to helping others achieve health and wellness while gaining self-confidence, stopping self-sabotage. This is going to be a big one for us today, and achieving their goals. Dr. Sitai maintains a private practice in San Diego, which is where I spent a lot of my formative years, where she works one-on-one with individuals, helping them understand their maladaptive behaviors and thought patterns while replacing them with a healthier perspective that allows them to overcome self-sabotage and thrive in their lives. She's written a new book, and actually a new workbook, called the Self-Sabotage Behavior Workbook, a step-by-step program to conquer negative thoughts, boost confidence, and learn to believe in yourself. I think a lot of you out there are going to love this talk. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sitai.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're really happy to have you. And I got to be honest with you that when it comes to the topic of self-sabotage, it's one of those, it's not like a dirty little secret, but I think it's one of those things that lots and lots of people suffer from and don't even realize they suffer from it. It's not like you wake up in the morning and go, you know, how can I screw up my day? But a lot of people, a lot of people do. So why don't we take it from the top? First of all, why this workbook?
Well, exactly the reason you just described is because it is so common. So many people do it. I mean, I honestly, I want to say everybody does it because I've never met somebody who doesn't, but people, number one, don't know exactly how they do it and they don't know what to do to stop it because it's so ingrained in all of us. And so the workbook is really an opportunity to help people understand their own personal self-sabotage, not only how they do it, but how it's impeding their growth and standing in their way, and then walks them through kind of the step-by-step process to fight it and to develop new healthy behavior patterns so they can actually begin to achieve success in all areas of their life. So that's really the purpose of it.
Dr. Sitai, I think, I'm sorry, John.
No, you go ahead.
People who aren't where they want to be in life, and that can be an internal lack of an internal state of desire or lack of external circumstances that they prefer, will often default to feeling stuck or like they're a victim and that they can't help it. So what's the first step to even recognize, well, maybe I am self-sabotaging?
Right.
How do you even first recognize that that is where you need to begin first? Because typically it is. So how do you know that?
And a lot of people actually do have a little bit of awareness of that. When I talk to my clients about self-sabotage, you know, every single one of them will nod their head and say, I absolutely do that. But when I ask them how or ask them to give me examples, they often get stuck. They have to kind of pause and think about it because they don't really know how they do it or any specifics. They just know that they do it. And I think the reason they get stuck is because in order to know how you self-sabotage, you also need to have a pretty clear understanding of what you want, of what your goals are. And if you can't pinpoint that, you can't really see how your self-sabotage is standing in the way of you getting there. So, you know, it's pretty common that self-sabotage is the only thing that's standing in your way of getting there. So in order to clearly understand your self-sabotage, you also need to understand what you want, what you're trying to achieve. And so for me, that's often the first step, helping people understand what it is that they actually truly want, whether that's with their career, with their relationships, with their weight, with their overall health and wellness. What do you really want? And then when you see that, you can then start to take some steps back and look at what behavior is standing in the way of you actually achieving that.
And it's not about self-blame, because that only perpetuates the stuckness. It's about saying, okay, maybe it's not such a bad thing if I have been self-sabotaging, because that means if I know what to do, I have the power to change it.
And if I know exactly how I've been self-sabotaging, right? And we really do, in order to fight self-sabotage, we really do need to understand the format that it takes, because it's different for everybody. And that's part of the focal points of the workbook is that self-sabotage is not one size fits all. And so the approach to addressing it is not one size fits all, right? You need to understand exactly how you do it to know how to fight it. And there are all different types and formats of self-sabotage. I mean, it comes in the form of procrastination. It comes in the form of avoidance. It comes in the form of self-criticism, right? I mean, there are so many different types of self-sabotage. When you understand how you do it, then you can start to look at how to fight it, because you know the format that it takes.
You made a light bulb go off, Dr. Seti, because while you were describing that, well, first of all, the question that I had formulated in my brain was, well, what causes the self-sabotage? But when you were talking, I said, wow, this is why sometimes, like when I try to counsel people, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a lawyer, like, and I can be counseling a family member or a client, I just can't get through. Like when I try to help somebody get from where they are to where they want to be, and they're so resistant, I must not be plugging into their particular form of self-sabotage.
How
do you do that?
And again, it goes back to their drivers, right? And you know, when we understand our goals, we understand what we want, and then we look at what's standing in our way, then we also probably need to look at some of our fears, which is the other side of it, right? Our anxieties, right? Our, you know, fear of success and fear of failure are, you know, major, major drivers that keep us paralyzed. And I know people think that's a very odd thing when I talk about fear of success, because, you know, if you want something, why would you be scared of it? It's kind of our goal.
Please answer that, because that question, I've heard that many times, that people fear success, and I don't deny
I don't
that it
get
exists
it.
Or that maybe even I experienced that, but why? I don't understand that.
Well, you know, many people look to success as the thing that's going to make them happy. Right? It's like, if I just could achieve X, then everything good will happen. And there's a real fear of that not coming to fruition, right? What if they achieve X and they don't get everything they've put on it, right? And there are other outcomes of success that may be unappealing, like the increased pressure or stress that may come with achieving whatever it is they're trying to achieve, less free time, a lot more of the unknown. Right. And the unknown is something that many people are scared of and many people try to avoid. And at least with failure, we're living in sort of the known. Right. It's an area we're comfortable in, even if it's not what we want. So fear of success can be fueled by insecurity, you know, not believing that you are worth it. And self-esteem is a huge factor that's tied into self-sabotage. But it can also be fueled by what I call the now what effect. So you've been sitting here saying, I want X and I'm trying to achieve X and I've been doing it for so long. If you achieve it, then what? What do you do now? What do you focus on now? And this belief that achieving that goal is going to magically solve all our problems is a factor that can tie into this fear of success. And then, you know, avoidance of the potential negative side effects that may come from achieving our goal. Maybe our goal is a major advancement in work, but there's a lot of negative that comes with that. Like I mentioned, pressure and stress and, you know, a lot of the stuff that we put on ourselves for, you know, even more pressure to achieve than what we were trying to do before. And so all of those things can be paralyzing and can keep us stuck.
Dr. Seti, does it matter? So like, for example, you could have two totally different goals. Like, let's say somebody wants to lose 100 pounds and mm-hmm. somebody else wants to make $1 million in a year. Like, those to me are two totally different things. But yep. Is it possible that the manner of self-sabotage can be the same regardless of the goal, if I'm phrasing yeah. that right?
Yes. Yes, it can be the same. It can be totally different. I mean, you may use, you know, procrastination as a form of self-sabotage in one area, and you may use overthinking as a form of self-sabotage in another area, or they may be the same, right? Maybe you use assuming as a form of self-sabotage in both areas. Maybe you assume that you'll never be successful, so why bother? Or, you know, you assume that success is not going to bring you happiness, so there's no point in making it happen, or that it's, you know, not gonna achieve what you wanted it to achieve, so why bother? And so it can be the same mode of self-sabotage. It can be completely different. And again, it's different with everybody. That's the thing about it, is it's not one size fits all.
So can you offer something? And I know you said it's there's a lot of variables and it's complex mm-hmm. and every case is different, but there has to be certain processes or certain fundamentals. Is someone listening right now say, you know, I know that I do this. Where do I start? Like, what's something mm-hmm. practical someone listening right now right. can do to stop self-sabotaging?
Sure. Well, there's a couple places to start. And as I mentioned, I like to have people start by looking at their goals, really understanding what it is they want. What are they trying to achieve in their life? Again, in any area of their life or every area of their life, to simply map that out and say, this is what I want, is a really effective place to start, because then you can drill down and say, well, what's standing in my way of achieving each one of these things? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great place to start, but obviously that's not everything. Then, you know, I look at self-sabotage and often describe self-sabotage to people as the voice in your head that's putting you down or talking you out of things or keeping you stuck. And most people can relate to that and can even start to hear that. What is the voice in your head saying when it says, don't do X or Y, or you're never going to achieve, or, you know, you're no good, or this isn't going to happen, or why bother, or this is too scary, or, you know, bad things will happen, so avoid this, right? If you can start to pay attention to that voice, it's a voice that we tend to ignore and minimize and don't give a lot of emphasis, even though it has so much power. But if you can start to pay attention to that voice, which is your self-sabotage, if you can start to pay attention to that voice, you can understand the mode in which you self-sabotage. So I actually have people start to track that voice and write down what that voice is saying to you. Is it emphasizing, you know, delayed gratification? Is it emphasizing avoidance of feared situation? Is it emphasizing self-attack and low self-esteem and beating you up, right? And if you can understand how it's talking to you, you can understand how you self-sabotage. And when you understand that, then again, you can start to fight it, because it's not logical. Our self-sabotage is almost never logical, even though it masquerades as logic. It's actually not very logical. So we can start to fight it with more rational thought, more appropriate, more realistic thought. But we need to understand what it's saying in order to be able to fight it.
Dr. Seti, can I ask you, I want to ask you a question that's like personal to me, because I can tell you right now that my biggest impediment to, you know, my big dreams is, and I think always has been, procrastination. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in my shoes. And yep. You know, and you could buy books on, oh, how to overcome procrastination. And you can even look at it logically and say, well, wait a minute, if procrastination is my problem, and I know that's my problem, all I got to do is stop doing that, I won't have the problem. But procrastination kind of like, you know, eats itself. Like the more you say you've got to stop procrastinating, the more you're procrastinating. Like it's a bad one. So is there like one tip like that you could give me like to do every morning when I wake up that would help me to stop procrastinating as a whole? Or is it not? Is it too complex for a simple fix?
I can give you a tip, but also say it's, again, not necessarily going to be the same thing for everybody. But when we look at procrastination as a form of self-sabotage, again, if we look at the way our self-sabotage voice is talking to us and understand that, then we can fight that concept. For example, procrastination, by the way, is absolutely the most well-known form of self-sabotage. So you're clearly not alone. But how does your self-sabotage manifest in terms of the way it speaks to you, right? People who self-sabotage via procrastination often use phrases like, I work better under pressure, or I really need a time crunch in order to be effective, right? Things like are the way, go ahead.
Yeah, mine doesn't do that. My procrastination says, okay, here's the things you want to do are over here, but these are all the other things you have to do first. And then because I do all those other things first, I never get to the things I want to do over here. Right. That's how it talks to me.
So, okay. So let's take that as an example. If we are going to assume that that's your self-sabotage, and we're also going to assume that your self-sabotage is not logical or not rational, then we need to respond to that with something that's more logical or more rational. So here's everything I want to do over here, but here are the things I need to do first. Well, wait a minute, can I do something over here first? And maybe the way you fight that is by starting your day doing something on that other list first and foremost, and making sure that you're always attacking that and saying, well, that's now my new logical thought, is I need to start my day by doing something on my want to list. And that's the way I proceed. And that's the way I shut my self-sabotage voice down. For somebody who says I work better under pressure, well, let me fight that thought and see what I can do without pressure or without a time crunch by saying, I know this isn't due till a week from now, but I'm going to start and do it right now. And I'm going to set a timer for an hour and see exactly how much I can accomplish. But the idea is with procrastination that there are all these thoughts that feed that procrastination. And we need to fight those thoughts so that they stop having power. If you keep saying I work better under pressure, you start to believe that you can only work under pressure. It sets you up to believe you can only achieve by putting things off. And that's it. And so that behavior reinforces itself. That thought continually reinforces itself. And so we need to fight that thought and create a new positive, more adaptive one that doesn't set us up for procrastination.
I want to add something here. I think, Jonna, I don't think you're a procrastinator. Dr. Setti, she runs a full-time law practice, but I can't tell you how many staff members. She just completed a six-month renovation addition on her home. She's on national television multiple times a week. Jonna, you're not a procrastinator. I don't think. But what I do think...
Here's the thing about that. I want to throw something in there because I use a lot of examples of this in my book. I mean, we see a lot of people who we deem as very successful, and we look at them and say, well, they've done X, Y, and Z, and you know, they don't self-sabotage at all. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, it may be that their self-sabotage exists in other forms that you can't see. And I use this joke with my friends all the time when I was writing this book that, you know, I'm procrastinating writing my chapter on procrastination. Because, you know, even I do this, right? I mean, I work in this field and I understand it, and it still exists, right? I mean, you know, you may look and say, well, you know, I'm a successful person, but it doesn't mean that these behaviors don't exist in me. It just means that I've found ways to present myself to the world in such a way that they may not see it. And, well, you know, you may see somebody who's very successful externally, but they may still have self-sabotaging behaviors.
Well, and that's the point right there. And this ties back into one of the first things that you said to us is one of the first things you do when you work with somebody is to really get to the root of what they want and what matters and what's important. And maybe even uncovering that it's certain external things that aren't really bringing you the internal joy and the internal fulfillment. John, I know you have projects on your docket. Will bring you great fulfillment and joy. And I think maybe it's a matter of stepping back and what Dr. Seti says, one of the first things to do is say, what do I really want? And make that a high, I think it's a priorities issue with you, not a procrastination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in this mini therapy session that I gave myself, it's what's important. If I just look at the list that I want to do and say, well, that's less important than the list that I have
to do.
And if I switch that around, see? Me and Dr. Seti are going on the road. We're taking this show on the road.
There you go. Let's make it happen.
She just fixed me in 5 minutes. Wow. Took 39 years. 39. I put that in air quotes.
And that was one of the first things that, that was one of the first things she said to us. That's the first thing she helps people do is to really get to the bottom of what they want.
That's the
starting point. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to understand, right? I mean, none of this makes any sense unless you understand what you want.
That's it. And that was the first point that you made. So I wish we could talk. We could talk about this for hours, but
we could make it all about Jonna for hours.
Which we have done in the past.
And it's fine. We love her.
but I'm assuming because we have not yet dug into your book, but we are going to dig into your book, and other people who want to too will be able to. It's literally a step-by-step guide on how to conquer these negative thoughts. So Dr. Seti, where can people get the book and also connect with you? Because even though you're in San Diego, we now live in a virtual world. So I'm sure people can connect with you for further help. Where can they find you?
Well, the book, obviously Amazon. It's the Self-Sabotage Behavior Workbook. So you can get it on Amazon. And people can connect with me via my website, meonlybetter.com. And obviously they can reach out directly to me there, as well as, sign up. I have many online programs, DIY programs for people who want to kind of work in their own space and in their own way. Or if they just have questions or are unsure what they need to do, what the right path is for them, they can email me, call me directly through there. So,
great.
I'm happy
also,
to point anyone in the right direction.
Can they find you on, are you on social media?
Yes, absolutely. Facebook, Instagram. I think on Instagram, I'm at Weight Loss Therapist. And on Facebook, I'm a Weight Loss Psychologist.
Although you help people overcome whatever is causing the self-sabotage, whether that has to do with weight loss or not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Got it. Great. It's important work you're doing.
Thank you. I think so, too.
Very important. Well, we look forward to diving into the Self-Sabotage Behavior Workbook. And we really enjoyed speaking with you this morning, Dr. Seti. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you guys.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Seti.
Thank you.
We will be right back here with Happy Hour. We're not done yet, so we've got segment number 3 on the way. And again, thanks to the doc for joining us today and enlightening us. And this is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. And stick around.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And good morning one more time here on Happy Hour. And welcome back to our third segment with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frank and Mary.
Oh, now there you go. That was pretty close. After 10 months, you guys are almost on it.
Nailed it.
As opposed to Carol, the last couple of weeks, you start. Hello, Frankenberry. 10 minutes later. Hello, Frankenberry.
Nailed it. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Thanks to Dr. Seti for joining us this morning. And, Jonna, you took a lot out of that, it seems.
Well, I actually really did. And one of the things that I love about talking to people who are so smart and bringing them to the Hudson Valley via the airwaves is that sometimes it does not have to be you. The simplest thing can spark something in you. And once that spark is sparked, positive change can happen. But, you know, and look, I'm not saying that, you know, having a guest on a show is a replacement for years of therapy, but it's just that one thing can open your eyes, and it can be something simple that you just overlook because you're busy being busy. You know, hey, I'm all for that. And I am honestly saying that Dr. Seti did that for me this morning. So I'm very grateful for that. And I'm going to do what she said to do. Because that's another thing that procrastinators don't do. Like, I can buy all the workbooks and all the courses and all that stuff and then not actually put them into action and not do what they say to do. And that's also, I think, a procrastinator's mantra. So I'm going to do it. And we're going to see how life-changing it is.
I'll give you another suggestion in addition to Dr. Seti's book. And I think I texted you about this. I'm trying to get her on the show. Haven't succeeded yet. But Danielle Laporte wrote a book called The Desire Man. Really, really good about. And it's really less about, I want to accomplish this thing so I feel a certain way. She reverses that and say, okay, let's first identify how you want to feel. You want to feel proud. Do you want to feel excited? You want to feel happy? Do you want to feel peace? What are the things you want to feel? Then let's map out some things to do to get to it. Really, really good.
Yeah, I would love to get her on the show. And speaking of that, I'm just going to go off on a little bit of a tangent before we wrap up here.
Tangent time.
Yes, surprise. Tangent time. Because I'm going to combine two things. One of the first things I did when I officially moved back into my new old house was I broke out my Christmas present that Frankenberry gave me this year, which was a mug specific to me, which paid homage to my Inside Out, you know what cup, which is we've talked about many times. Yeah, so Frankenberry got me a mug to pay homage to a mug that basically said, you know, don't make me put you in the cup. Which was just fabulous. So I had my first cup of coffee in the new old house out of that mug, which takes me to, because you were talking about trying to get a guest on the show. Also last week, I reached out to a potential guest who turned us down. Now, over the year, we've been doing this a long time. We can count on one hand the number of people who have actually turned us down. But I'm thinking of once that happens, like you're dead to me. I'm never going to buy anything.
I know you'll forward a text to me or an email and you'll like put her in the cup.
Well, I think we're going to start a new cup. We're going to start a cup just for the guests who turn us down. Now, that cup's going to be a lot emptier than my other cup, of course. but yeah, so that happened this week. I'll tell you off air who the guest was. It was no great shakes, but it's always nice when they turn you down. Like, we would love to, but we're so overcommitted. That's code for bull. That's all I got to say about that.
Okay.
that's code for happy hour becoming a mobster film. And you're dead to me.
That's right. You're so dead.
You better be looking over your shoulder.
How many times do I have to tell you to play with the dirty money? Yeah, so that happened. But anyway, so all right, guys. Well, good show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a good show. Again, thank you so much to Dr. Candace Seti for joining us this morning. And we'll be back again next week. You know, and as I've said before in the past, that is a warning. So just beware. And we'll be back at the same time, as we always are, here on 92.9 WBPM. It'll be John Spilbore. It'll be Carol Pesci and myself. And we ask you to join us then. And thank you for joining us today. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with John Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.